In this podcast report, I'm going to explain how the West has already lost its position as the hegemonic rulers of the world. And this is why the West is fighting so hard in Ukraine to try to stop Russia, because once Ukraine falls, which is very, very close, it's a domino effect of loss of global fear of the United States and Western nations and NATO in particular. And it is this fear, this fear of military dominance, that has kept the other nations in line since the end of World War II. But that era is coming to an end. So let's back up for a moment here and understand that era. Let's understand that following World War II, during which the United States of America was the industrial hub of the world, the United States manufactured more stuff than anybody in the world. And this was the secret of victory against, you know, the Nazi regime and also against the Japanese Empire, was massive production. Steel, the ability to produce tanks, the ability to produce planes, you know, all of this. In the 1950s and 60s and even early 70s, the United States continued to be the strongest producer in the world, and backed by atomic weapons, it could enforce its goals, its political goals, or its political will on the rest of the world. But beginning in the late 1970s and accelerating through the 1980s and 1990s, the U.S. abandoned its manufacturing base. It began offshoring, offshoring manufacturing to China in particular, but also a lot of other countries around the world. And this was accelerated by Richard Nixon's recognition of China rather than Taiwan. So Nixon moved us from Taiwan recognition to China recognition in order to increase trade with China. And Nixon also took us off the gold standard and put us on the currency printing scheme that is about to end. So this is all very key, actually, what Richard Nixon did in right around 1971. I don't recall the exact date, but right around 1971, these two things happened. So the offshoring of manufacturing to China, allowing China to build and export to the United States, which shifted the manufacturing base out of the U.S. and converted the U.S. into a consumer base. So instead of the U.S. producing goods, the U.S. began producing what? What did the U.S. produce? Debt. You got it. The U.S. shifted from making stuff to making currency. And then the U.S. traded the currency for other countries' stuff. And that shifted the U.S. citizen into a consumer, which was part of the decline into the pathetic nature of the U.S. man, which has now become a metrosexual pansy compared to the rest of the men in the world. And along with this, we had, you know, attacks on the family and the transgenderism push. This is why the LGBT agenda was pushed so aggressively. It was the demasculinization of America. And it worked. Many men, most men, not all, but most men in America today, you can hardly call them men. They're just weak little pansies. They don't know how to work. They don't have real skills, you know, etc. This is all by design, so that the U.S. would be a consumer society. But in order to do that, the U.S. had to generate debt, export debt, and convince the rest of the world to accept the U.S. dollar debt. Well, the dollar is a debt instrument, but the world had to be convinced to accept the dollar in exchange for their goods and services and oil. So how was that enforced? It's enforced through the military and economic sanctions, banking sanctions, SWIFT sanctions, you know, that kind of thing. But mostly it's the military, which means the U.S. Navy. So if your country did not behave, let's say Libya, then the U.S. would just roll into the Mediterranean with some aircraft carriers and strike force groups and just bomb the smithereens out of Libya and kill the leader, Gaddafi, and say, well, that's what happens when you don't use the U.S. dollar to sell oil, you know. Saddam Hussein, same treatment, you name it. So this whole system of allowing America to function as a consumer-based society, which is rich in material wealth, is dependent on the ability of the U.S. military to project a legitimate threat of force to other nations around the world. That is why, if the U.S. loses in Ukraine, it's over for the West. Because then the U.S. will be seen as a paper tiger that just got toppled by Russia, a country that most of the Western press said was nothing more than a gas station with nukes. And it was, what, a year ago, 2 years ago, the von der Leyen of the EU was saying that Russia had run out of microchips and they had to use microchips from dishwashers and appliances to build their missiles, you know. The West was just mocking Russia as this backward country that's incapable of anything other than exporting oil and building nukes. But of course, that narrative was fiction. Turns out that Russia has built an industrial might that is, it actually dwarfs what the United States had at the end of World War II. Russia now produces more steel than America produced. Russia produces more weapons. And Russia produces more high-tech weapons, such as the new game-changing Oreshnik missile system, which nothing in the West can even come close to matching. So, my, how times have changed. Russia has become today, or it has taken the dominant position of industrial output that the U.S. occupied at the end of World War II. But Russia has, of course, much better technology and, you know, hypersonic missiles and all kinds of things, electromagnetic warfare. So, the West is about to lose Ukraine. This is not in doubt. I've said this for 2 years. It did take longer than I anticipated, but Ukraine's front lines are just about to collapse. And there's not much that Ukraine can do to stop this. So Ukraine is going to fall. In addition, the Oreshnik missile system makes U.S. aircraft carriers obsolete, as do hypersonic missiles, which are now deployed by Yemen, believe it or not, as well as, of course, Iran. So many countries have anti-aircraft carrier missile systems now, and the aircraft carrier is an obsolete, you know, floating dinosaur in essence, and it's only a matter of time before one or more are completely destroyed. And if you don't believe me, it was Pete Hegseth, who has been nominated to run the Pentagon, who has said that China could destroy all of U.S. aircraft carriers in about 20 minutes. And he's not wrong. China has that capability, Russia has that capability, and Iran has a similar capability, though not as large. So here's the question. If the entire economic system of America, which has managed to keep largely incapable people, that is, incapable of working, incapable of making much of anything, managed to keep them, you know, well-fed and well-stocked with material goods, but this was based on exporting debt, and it was enforced on other countries at gunpoint, essentially, by the U.S. Navy, what happens when the U.S. Navy is destroyed? Well, I think you already know the answer. And it doesn't even have to be that the Navy is completely destroyed. It just has to be shown to be sinkable. It could be just one aircraft carrier is destroyed, which will probably happen pretty soon. Then all of a sudden, the other nations around the world realize, well, hey, we're not afraid of America anymore. We're going to join BRICS. We're not afraid of sanctions from the U.S. anymore. Sanctions are the favorite weapon of the U.S. empire. We're going to sanction you. We're going to make it so that you can't use banks. We control the banks. Well, what happens when you don't control the banks? What happens when there's a new BRICS financial system? The West cannot credibly threaten those other nations, and those nations are tired of being coerced and threatened and blocked from transactions, and that's why over 100 nations will join BRICS. And BRICS is a system where economic sanctions cannot be implemented, by the way, against BRICS members, because it's a distributed blockchain permissioned system of exchange of the unit tokens. So no one nation can control it and weaponize it against any other nation. In other words, it's a superior system of international settlement. So of course, every nation in the world is going to want to go to that. Other than the few Western nations that are going to try to resist and live in their own bubble. That'll be the US, Canada, the UK, maybe France. Who knows? Germany will eventually have to go back to Russia. You know, I mean, doing deals with Russia for energy. Japan, Taiwan, Australia, New Zealand. These will be the Western ally forces, and they will suffer an economic collapse as the dollar currency is rejected by the world and as the U.S. military, or the Navy in particular, is partially destroyed. When this happens, as the U.S. empire plunges into military weakness, China is very likely to assert itself against Taiwan. You will see a lot of forces in Europe assert their power, maybe even domestically, uprisings or revolutions in certain countries like France or Germany, maybe even in the UK for that matter. You're going to see a lot of interesting things in Austria, Romania, Poland, and Hungary in particular. Turkey will leave NATO. Turkey will join BRICS. BRICS will become the largest trading bloc in the world by far because it will have China, Turkey, India, Russia, Iran, plus a lot of other smaller nations like North Korea and, Brazil. I forgot Brazil. It's going to be massive, right? So what's the upshot of all of this? I mean, this is the direction it's going. There's no stopping this. The West is on its last legs, but the Western leaders are still delusional. They still think they're living in the 1950s when the U.S. could dominate the world and just command everybody to follow orders. That is no longer the case. And I would imagine like Putin and people in Russia are just shaking their heads in disbelief. Like, how can these Western people be so unbelievably delusional, thinking that they still call the shots, that they still control the world when they don't? Well, it's only going to take a few carefully placed Oreshnik missile strikes to, let's say, excise that delusion from the consciousness of Western leaders when their command centers start getting obliterated, such as the Fifth Fleet command and logistics buildings in Kuwait. One Oreshnik strike and kaboom, it's turned to dust. Like literal dust. 4,000 degrees centigrade is the heat that's generated at the impact site. Yeah, 4,000 degrees. Turns everything to dust. And that's what's going to happen to the Fifth Fleet Command Center in Kuwait. And there are, of course, about 50, 55,000 other U.S. troops in U.S. military bases across the Middle East, and they will all be destroyed. And you will have tens of thousands of American troops coming home in draped coffins. That will send an interesting signal to Western leaders, but many of them are still delusional, like, you know, Sebastian Gorka and probably Pete Hegseth and probably Trump himself, because he thinks he can still use sanctions as a weapon that's very effective to punish nations that don't go along with what he wants. And he's going to have to learn the hard way that that's not the case. Now, what does this have to do with you and me? The upshot of all of this is that we've been living in an artificially easy economy most of our lives. All of you listening, you were probably born after World War II, most of you. Some of you perhaps not, but most people listening were born after World War II. So you have lived in an artificial economy that's been based on material abundance created by artificial debt creation and the exporting of debt to the world, which is, you know, the central bank printing dollars and this whole dynamic I've described here, the military forcing other countries to accept dollars. This has been artificial. This is why most of the world lives in relative poverty compared to the United States, except for those nations that have made something of themselves, like Russia. Russia is a nation of clean cities, very advanced technology, not impoverished. I mean, compare Russia's cities to U.S. cities, and there's no comparison. The U.S. cities are like dumps, but there are many other nations, manufacturing-based nations, in Central and South America, for example, in Southeast Asia, and in Africa, and some in the Middle East, where poverty is widespread, and that includes India. India is still living under mostly poverty, by the way. So as the Western empires collapse, and their ability to export currency collapses, and their ability to project naval power collapses, you will have a collapse in material wealth or quality of life. And the way that will be experienced is that it will cost a fortune to import anything from other countries. Now, this is on top of the tariffs that Trump's going to put into place. We're talking about currency wars on a global scale, where the dollar becomes worth less and less, to the point where you might have to spend 10,000 of them to buy a dishwasher, for example. I think, whoa, what do you mean? A dishwasher is going to cost $10,000? Indeed it will. Sooner or later, because the dollar is just going to be printed into oblivion. I mean, a good dishwasher right now, like a high-end one, would cost, what, $1,500? Even you could spend $2,000 right now. That's going to become $10,000, even for base models. So the lifestyle that we have all been living under, where it's relatively easy to acquire automobiles, appliances, clothing, electronics, mobile phones, whatever, consumer goods, that is going to rapidly erode to the point where average Americans can hardly afford much of anything. And many Americans will struggle to eat. Many more Americans will become impoverished and will face food scarcity. Or, you know, food insecurity, I think, as it's called in the media. More people will turn to growing their own food because it will make economic sense to do so, since sunlight is free and, you know, garden seeds reproduce themselves for free, as long as you're using heirloom non-GMO seeds. And, you know, when a green pepper costs $20 in the grocery store and you can grow a green pepper for a fraction of that, people are going to grow. And so you're going to see across the U.S. a return to a more decentralized, local, and partially agrarian society, which is more characteristic of developing nations. And in this effort, you're going to see mass migration out of the cities. Why? Because you can't grow food in the cities. And land is going to become incredibly valuable. Because while dollars are becoming worthless, everybody still needs to eat. Farmland will be the next gold, in essence, and that's why Bill Gates has been buying up millions of acres of farmland. He knows exactly what's coming. When the dollar collapses, food is still necessary. Farmland becomes, you know, like gold. So there'll be a mad rush out of the cities into the rural areas, especially where you can grow food, which means access to water is going to be critical. Water is also the next gold, or you could call it, you know, blue gold or whatever you want to call it. Access to water will be critical. So you're going to see a massive increase in people building rainwater collection systems. You're going to see surface water irrigation projects so that people can collect water in small ponds and use that for irrigation. You're going to see a lot more local farming operations where people use animals to produce the fertilizer and then the fertilizer to grow the food. Food will be very expensive, so a lot of farmers' markets are going to sprout up because it will make more economic sense to grow food and sell it at the market or trade it for something. So you're going to see actually a decentralization of agriculture, which is a healthy thing taking place. And you'll see more people beginning to learn food and gardening skills, which is also a positive thing for this nation. As a result of all of this, real estate prices in the cities are going to collapse overall. Although in places like Texas, where people want to go, city real estate prices may hold. But in the blue states, or the blue cities in particular, where the leadership is completely insane, real estate will collapse. People will move out, mass exodus out of those blue cities. Rural real estate may continue to rise, and especially in the red states where people want to live. Now, as a result of the collapse of real estate valuations in the cities, the property tax receipts and revenues for those cities will also collapse. This will affect cities and counties. This will cause severe financial problems. They may try to sell bonds, but who's going to buy them? Ultimately, they're going to have to start dismantling or abandoning infrastructure. So you're going to see cities start turning off streetlights and stop repairing roads. You'll see in some areas they're going to tear up paved roads and turn them into gravel roads. So you're going to see a reversal. Just like I said earlier, you'll see a decentralization into a partially agrarian society. You're going to see paved areas in what used to be cities or suburbs, they will revert to gravel roads, and they will not be maintained by the cities. Cities that were once expanding their geography to incorporate rural areas, they will reverse that, and they will begin to let go of areas because they don't want to maintain the sewers, the electrical, the power grid infrastructure. They don't want to be responsible for police and fire response, etc. So once again, you're going to see a ruralization of America in effect as more rural areas have to take on these tasks for themselves through volunteer fire departments or very low budget police departments where, you know, you call 911 and they say, we have a 45-minute response time. As a result, guess what? You're going to have more people purchasing firearms and becoming proficient in providing for their own security. And so this is part of the decentralization. Just like you'll see more food decentralized, you will also see security decentralized. You won't be able to count on police as you can right now, especially in the cities. Now, a lot of people leaving the cities own nothing. They rented. They have no money to purchase land. As a result, you're going to see a lot of looters, a lot of people running theft operations. As they come out of the cities, they will form gangs, and these gangs will attempt to do things like steal vehicles or construction equipment or to loot houses and steal whatever they can. This will be organized. In some areas where the Second Amendment is strong, these gangs will be stopped through ventilation operations. And in other areas, they will be allowed to continue. That will be in the blue states where people aren't willing to defend themselves, or where there are no police, or people don't own firearms or aren't willing to use them. So you're going to see really two different versions of America, depending on the willingness of the local community to uphold the rule of law. You're also going to see a collapse into more instant justice. So if someone is caught looting because of lack of money and bandwidth of finances in the court system and so on, in some areas you're going to see looters just literally just strung up on trees. They'll be hanged or just shot. You know, you're going to see that kind of thing happening, and it's going to be accepted by the local community because they will say, well, you know, hey, there's too many looters. Our jail is full. The court system has a 6-month backlog. I guess we have to start, you know, shooting them. And that's going to happen across certain areas of America. As a result of the, you know, all the crime and all the violence, etc. Child traffickers, if they get caught, you know, forget it. They're done. And some would argue maybe that's the appropriate thing, appropriate punishment for them. But understand, you're going to see the collapse of due process in America. So the judicial system, which is already barely functioning, will basically be nullified in many areas. They won't even turn to it. They'll just have instant justice in many places. So keep that in mind in terms of where this is all going. Internationally, the United States empire, the collapsing empire, will be seen increasingly as irrelevant to the world. In the long run, the experiment of the United States of America and the experiment of Western Europe colonized by Christians, all of that will come to an end. Western Europe will be overrun by Muslims. The United States will collapse into a third world Haiti-like nation. Lawlessness and mass starvation will be rampant. There will be the super wealthy that have technology and weapons and private security guards. And then there will be the mass impoverished people who will be begging for food or stealing for food. The U.S. government will likely collapse. There will be a default on the debt. I think that will happen under Trump. And we're likely to see secession, especially Texas, will form its own republic. And then, if it does the right things, Texas might actually be unleash a new golden era. If it has honest currency, it's got energy, it's got food, it's got land, it's got resources. A lot of good people are coming to Texas and other areas, and we might see a resurgence in certain regions while we simultaneously see a collapse of other regions like the West Coast of California, you know, the Seattle area, Chicago, all the libtard areas, the blue cities will collapse into Haiti. But Texas doesn't have to, nor does, you know, Florida or Tennessee or, you know, Missouri or whatever. State by state, the states have to make their decisions of do they want to collapse or do they want to experience abundance. But that's the future that we are all about to experience. So to stay informed about this future, I encourage you, read my website, naturalnews.com. We publish stories, of course, every day, twice a day. Many stories there. We have a whole writing staff, naturalnews.com. And then also check out my videos on brighteon.com and support us at healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care. Now through December 2nd at the Health Ranger Store, we have all of our silver-based products on sale, 15% off automatically in the shopping cart when you purchase them at healthrangerstore.com. Let me show you what we have. We've got the silver gel. This is the first aid gel in the squeeze tubes there. Everybody loves this. It's got 8 different essential oils in it. I formulated this myself. It's got 1,000 uses around the home or ranch, or even I've donated this to first responders and guys that run on the border to try to protect our border in Texas. They use that gel. We've got silver-based deodorant, which has different forms of magnesium in it as well. It's not an aluminum formula. We don't use aluminum in our deodorants. It's silver and baking soda and magnesium. It's very natural. People love that deodorant. And we don't add, of course, any artificial fragrance or synthetic fragrance chemicals to anything. We just don't use that across any of our products, period. We've also got the silver breath spray there, which is a sprayable version that is great for getting silver, you know, into your mouth, and for lots of different reasons that can be supportive of your overall health. Sometimes I have to search for the right words to tell you what these products can do, you know, because of all kinds of restrictions on freedom of speech. But we have Castile liquid soap there, which has silver infused in it as well. So that's a special soap formulation, completely unscented, that has these extra special properties of colloidal silver. And then on top of that, we have colloidal silver mouthwash and gargle there on the left side of your screen. And right now, I think that's the only flavor we have in stock. Normally, we have other flavors. They are coming back into stock over time. But that's what we have available right now. And it is mixed with all kinds of oral health herbs. In fact, I want to show you this, what's in that product, because it's so really impressive. It's got iodine and zinc in it. And in addition, here are some of the ingredients. Well, here's what's not in it. No fluoride, no aspartame, no alcohol. But it has xylitol, which is anti-cavity by itself. Zinc. It's got myrrh, a biblical herb that's great for gum health. It's got black walnut hulls. Stevia for a little bit of sweetener. Prickly ash bark, also excellent for oral health. Peppermint oil, clove oil, tea tree oil, menthol, and iodine. This makes it an amazing mouthwash. There's just nothing else in the marketplace that is like this. And, you know, nothing synthetic. It's not all sugared up. It's got really strong functional herbs in it.
you don't even need a lot of this. Take a small amount, swish it around. You can even add a little bit of water to it to dilute it and just swish it around. Your gum health, you will notice a difference within just a couple of weeks, if not sooner. But this is available 15% off, which is a rare discount. We normally don't have that kind of discount on any of these products, but we're offering this right now to say happy Thanksgiving. Thank you for all your support. These discounts on all these silver products, show my desk again. This discount applies to all these products automatically in your shopping cart. And this is good through midnight, December 2nd. So thank you for your support. Stock up on these while we can. Happy Thanksgiving. And we appreciate everything that you do to help keep us online and in business. HealthRangerStore.com is the website. And every sale helps support our platforms such as Brighteon and Natural News and Brighteon.io, Brighteon.ai, etc. So thank you for all your support. God bless you all and God bless America.